Hi, everybody. Welcome to Fireside Chat number 310.
Yes.
All right. Wow. It took 300 and something times for me to remember the number. This is Mr. Tubbs, and the chances of his hanging around for more than a minute are minimal. But at least I want you to meet him, the successor to the late, great Otto. This is the Fireside Chat, my chance to talk to you about what is on my mind every week and then take your questions. And there he goes. All right. Anyway, you caught a glimpse of Mr. Tubbs. That was better than usual. Well, my friends, this is a very tough one for me, and I rarely say that. As you probably have figured out by now, it takes a great deal to get me down. My expectations from life are not what many people's are, so I sort of ride with disappointment. I know that it is inevitable, but the events of this past weekend in the Middle East, the barbarity, sadism, cruelty has reached a level that few have seen in our lifetime. And I want to talk to you about it. I don't know how many years ago it is, but at the very beginning of PragerU, I made a video, one of the five-minute videos that we have on explaining the Middle East. What is the name of it, actually? Was it called the Middle East? I don't know. Or is it Explaining the Middle East? I'd like people to be able to see it. It's probably the most widely viewed video on the Middle East in the world.
The Middle East problem.
The Middle East problem. Thank you. I mean, tens of millions of views. And I'm very happy about that for PragerU, and especially because it helped clarify the issue. Again, it was 5 minutes. My theme was that the Middle East problem is one of the easiest to explain and one of the toughest to solve. And basically, it came down to my repeated theme in the 5 minutes. One side wants the other side dead. And I make it a matter of policy not to overstate, not to exaggerate. But it sounds like, oh, well, that's a little over the top, Dennis. But this weekend, in case you thought that was over the top, proved that that is not the case. Hamas and Hezbollah and other extreme Muslim elements who are quite powerful in the Muslim world, such as the entire Iranian government, the Islamic Republic of Iran, want Israel annihilated. Not defeated, not subjugated, annihilated. It is the only call to genocide and to the extermination of a state in the world. Can you think of any other nation that is targeted for extinction? There isn't any other. There are fights in this world, there are enemies, but the notion that you should cease to exist and we will kill as many of your people as possible is unique to those Muslims who want to destroy Israel. And you saw it in practice. The targets were not the Israeli army. The entire target was Jews in Israel, in their homes, at their concert. About 270 young people were massacred who were attending a concert. I believe it was even a peace concert, ironically. But that's not here or there. It was a concert. And they were massacred en masse. And you know why? Because they were Jews. And that's really important to understand the issue of the Middle East. What we have here, and people don't want to hear this because people don't like to confront evil. I have a whole theory on that, which I may have mentioned in past fireside chats. People don't want to confront evil, and that's why I've said all of my life, evil is not dark, evil is so bright, people don't look at it. you can easily look into the dark, but it's impossible to look into extremely bright light. You cannot look at the sun. People don't look at evil. It's too painful to do so. That's why I remember in high school, I didn't understand why everybody didn't hate communism. It slaughtered more people than any doctrine in one given period of time, 100 years, than anything in the history of the world. Why didn't people hate it? Because people don't rarely confront real evils. So what we have here is a desire to do what the Nazis did. In this case, kill every Jew in Israel. Exterminate the state and kill the Jews. I asked the question in my video, and I beg you to watch it. It's only 5 minutes. I asked the question, this should explain everything. What would happen if Israel said, we will fight no longer, we are laying down our arms? And what would happen if the Palestinians said, we will fight no longer, we are laying down our arms? And I answered my own question. If Israel said it, I said, if Israel said that, Israelis would be the victims of genocide beginning the next day. If the Palestinians said that, there would be peace the next day. If the Palestinians said, no more fighting, we lay down our arms. That's a pretty big difference. And I'm tragically and deeply, painfully, we saw this past weekend, going into homes and massacring every member of a family, parents, children, grandparents, babies. As I've often pointed out in my book on anti-Semitism called Why the Jews, for the Nazis, every Jew was worthy of being killed, babies and grandparents alike. For you to believe that a baby is your mortal enemy, that is really a doctrine of unparalleled genocidal hatred. But that is what Hamas believes. That is what Hezbollah believes. That is what the Iranian government believes. A Jewish baby in Israel is as worthy of death as a Jewish soldier. And just as the Nazis did, Jewish babies were as worthy of death as an adult male Jew. The number of Israelis killed in American population terms was approximately 40,000. In other words, if the number of Israelis is extrapolated proportionately to American population, Israel lost at least 30 to 40,000 people. And another double that who are wounded many horribly. Can you imagine that in American terms or whatever your country is? This, as pointed out in the Israeli press, I had not thought about this. More Jews were killed this past Saturday than on any day since the Holocaust. So in case you think Jews think too much about the Holocaust, this should be a wake-up call. The reason Jews think about the Holocaust is because it could happen again. There are people who want it to happen again. Powerful forces. The Iranian government has stated our raison d'etre, our reason for being, is to annihilate Israel. Let me read to you from the Hamas charter. I'll just read to you two paragraphs from the charter of Hamas. Israel will exist and will continue to exist until Islam will obliterate it, just as it obliterated others before it. That's their charter, is to obliterate a state. Does this exist anywhere else in the world? Is there any other charter of any other group to obliterate a country? Here's one other that I will offer you from the charter of Hamas. The day of judgment will not come about until Muslims fight Jews and kill them. Then the Jews, notice not Israelis, just for the record, then the Jews will hide behind rocks and trees, and the rocks and trees will cry out, O Muslim, there is a Jew hiding behind me, come and kill him. That's from the Quran. Okay? So just in case you have gone to college and learned this idiocy that Israel is responsible for what happened because of its occupation of Palestinian territory. The only reason Israel occupies Palestinian territory is because many Palestinians want to destroy Israel. Israel actually stopped occupying Gaza. How many of you know that? Well, you didn't know it if you went to college because you weren't taught it. That's right. Israel simply said, okay, we are leaving Gaza. It's yours. We no longer have any desire to occupy it. And what they got as a result was Hamas. They elected the group that is dedicated to murdering every Jew in Israel. So this notion of, well, Israel should stop occupying Palestinian land. If Israel does that, then all it does is unleash forces that wished to commit genocide against Israelis. I mean, what do you want Israel to do? You have to live in a state of mendacious denial. Mendacious means lying. You have to lie to yourself in order to believe that it would be safe in any way for Israel to abandon the occupation of these lands. It would only mean that sadists and Jew haters would take over and do what was done this weekend on as vast a scale as possible. And by the way, it may get worse. I don't know. Hezbollah has 10 times as many rockets as Hamas does in Lebanon. These rockets that are sent over to Israel are there to kill as many Israelis as possible. They don't even know where they'll land. They just send them over in the thousands and thousands, hoping that they'll just obliterate a Jew here and a Jew there and a Jewish family here and a Jewish family there. So this notion, oh, it's the occupation, which I read over and over in among academics and in the world media. Oh, it's the occupation that caused this. This is what some congressmen in the United States have said, some pro-Palestinian congressmen. It's the occupation. But they have everything backwards. Israel had no desire to occupy this land, but it was forced to in the Six-Day War in 1967. When they fought for their existence, as they have in every case. You have to understand my motto. One side wants the other side dead. Israel doesn't want to die. That's the only reason that it occupies those territories. It's a pretty rational response, isn't it? Israel, generally speaking, has zero desire to occupy and had zero desire to occupy any of this land. They begged. I mean, this is history that, again, people learn so little in high school and college, but it's really basic. In 1967, during that war between Israel and its enemies, Israel begged the king of Jordan, which then had within Jordan the West Bank, where the Palestinians, many Palestinians live. And they begged him, don't join Syria and Egypt in fighting us. We have no designs on the West Bank. You can keep it, and the Palestinians will be part of Jordan just as they have been from the beginning. And instead, he joined Syria and Egypt in attacking Israel. And that's when everything went awry. People don't know these things. It's the occupation. I read to you the charter. The charter has nothing to do with the occupation. Israel's existence is occupation as far as they're concerned. If Israel occupied 200 square feet, they would try to obliterate it. There are 22 Arab states, 52 Muslim states. There's one Jewish state, the size of New Jersey. And for whatever reason, they want to exterminate it. 22 Arab states is not enough. There has to be another. But there can't be one Jewish state. So this is what we have just witnessed. The desire to murder as many as possible, and then the barbarity of it. One young woman who was at the concert was actually a German tourist. Her body, her naked body, was being wheeled through or driven through Gaza, and they kept hitting it with big wooden sticks. The dead, naked body of the woman, with gleeful crowds cheering it on. You could see it. It's very, very easily seen on the internet. I mean, this is a level of barbarity. For you, anyone, to compare Israel and its enemies as morally equivalent, as a true moron, a professor of Jewish studies at UCLA did in the Los Angeles Times, a professor of Jewish studies, it gives you an idea of how deep moral relativism has infected virtually every discipline in colleges. I debated this man, a true fool, many years ago. The debate was, are Israel and its enemies morally equivalent? And he said yes, and I said no. He wrote about the cycle of violence. Cycle of violence, what a stupid term. Was there a cycle of violence between the U.S. and Japan in World War II? Was there a cycle of violence between the Allies and Germany in World War II? What is that even, cycle of violence? It's a response on Israel's part to violence against it. There are many other questions. How did Israel allow this to happen to the extent that it did? Why did it happen now? Has the United States become so weak on the world stage that evil regimes are taking advantage of it? These are very real questions, but I wanted to deal with the moral issue today. Maybe we'll cover them another time. There is no moral equivalence. One side wants the other side dead. All right. What's our timing, Megan?
17.
Cool. We could go on then. All right, here we go. Take your questions.
Hey, Dennis. My name's Darren. I live in Dublin in Ireland, obviously quite far away from you guys. The question I had for you was, what can someone like me do? Obviously, I don't live in the States, but what could I do and people like me do to further the values that are promulgated by, you know, the Prager youths of this world? And how can we play our part in forwarding those values globally as well as obviously in the States?
Well, I am very touched that you asked the question. You know, I want to make a point here before I answer you. As far as I'm concerned, every value we stand for is universal. I think that they are quintessentially American values, but they're universal values. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is terminology that is unique to the American Declaration of Independence. In God we trust, e pluribus unum, and liberty is a unique, what I call, American trinity. But these are all universal values. Judeo-Christian values, the idea that God is the source of moral absolutes, and wants us to live by the Ten Commandments, those are pretty universal. So it makes perfect sense that you would be moved by what we do in Ireland. And that would be true for some young person anywhere in Angola or Argentina or wherever it might be. What can you do? This is the most often asked question I get. What can I do, whether it's an American or a non-American? The very fact that you ask it is 50% of the answer. You want to do something. You are not prepared to watch the moral decline of Western civilization, the greatest civilization that has ever been invented. If you care about liberty and if you care about human rights, etc. So the first thing you should do is learn. The more you know, the better equipped you will be to fight. To be able to explain, gee, why is Western civilization morally superior? While understanding that there are many bad people in the West and many fine people outside of the West. This is not a statement about people. It's a statement about civilization and its values. So that's a big deal. Equip yourself to be intellectually armed. I look at knowledge as ammunition. And you can't fight a war without ammunition. You can't fight it without knowledge. Second, once you have become clear on matters, become public. Whether it's by speaking, or it's by writing, or by putting things up on social media, the problem for many people is not that they don't know what to do, it's that they are afraid to do it. By the way, I don't blame them. The moment you put up one non-left piece of information on X, formerly known as Twitter, or Facebook, or YouTube, you will be profoundly attacked. That is correct. So one of the things you have to do in order to become a good person, or in order to do good, is not worry about being disliked or even hated. That's, by the way, I think that's one of the questions coming up, so I'll deal with that then. But that is another way to equip yourself. And that is why something you need is a buffer. You need something to keep you strong while you're attacked, and you will be. And that is, you need kindred spirits in your life. You can't do this alone. I haven't done any of this alone. I have so many kindred spirits in my life. That's my buffer between the world, as it were, and me. Since Florida and Oklahoma and other states announced that PragerU videos can be used, they didn't even say they had to be used, in classrooms, the amount of attacks on me personally and on PragerU generally has been almost as great as the number of mainstream media in the United States of America, and for that matter elsewhere. The Guardian joined in. Last week, I dealt with that, a New York Times attack on me and PragerU, and I responded to it. I read this stuff, and all I could say to myself is this: if we were ineffective, we wouldn't be attacked. So I do take some degree of solace and comfort from the fact that I am attacked and PragerU was attacked. What is the saying? You get the most flack when you're over the target. So you have to prepare yourself with kindred spirits in your life, with knowledge, with the understanding you won't be loved. No one who has ever done immense good in history has been loved. Such is the human condition. Worthy of its own fireside chat. Why is that the case? Anyway, thank you, and let me know how it goes. Susan, 66 years old, Northeast Colorado. Hello, Dennis, from the red part of the state of Colorado. That's conservative part. Thank you so much for your wise voice of reason in this currently very confused country over common sense matters. Many conservative commentators equate liberal with left. I have heard you say many times, by the left, I don't mean liberals. Liberals vote for the left, but liberals don't think like the left. Pretty close. I'm glad. You see, what is my line? Repetition is the mother of pedagogy, of learning. So my question is, if that is true, why did they vote for the left? By voting for the left, they are endorsing what the left is pushing. Please explain why liberals vote left if they don't think like the left. Another question on the same issue. Todd in Alabama. Dennis, you frequently distinguish between leftists and liberals and say that liberals vote for leftists against their values. Question, my life, my family's life, and the health of my country is not really affected by individual liberals, but is greatly affected by the leftists they vote for. Why should I care about the difference? Isn't being complicit in electing politicians and other leaders who promote evil itself evil? The reason it's, there are at least two reasons it's important to make the left-liberal distinction. One, because it's true, and truth has to be pursued no matter what. End of issue. Whether it leads immediately to good or not is not the question. Truth is truth. There is nothing in common between liberal values and left-wing values. The only thing they share is belief in big government. That's it. That's a big deal, but that's it. Liberals don't believe in all black dormitories. Liberals do believe in capitalism. Liberals do support Israel. Liberals do think the United States is essentially a wonderful country with its flaws because it's composed of humans and humans are flawed, etc. I have a whole article on differences between left and liberal, which is worthy of consulting. So truth is one reason, but there's another. I want liberals to hear this. You are voting the opposite of what you believe. You are damaging our country and the West by doing that. This is a challenge to liberals. You're the only group that doesn't vote its values. The left votes its values, conservatives vote their values, liberals do not. So this is a huge challenge to the liberal, and it needs to be made. Okay, let's see. Jamie, 34, in Denver. Why does it say NC? Is there a Denver, North Carolina? Maybe. That's what it says. Hello, I just listened to your podcast episode, Is God Alone Sufficient? In it, you said you were not offended by the person who was arguing against you. And by the way you spoke, I believe you really weren't. It mattered very much to me because I get paralyzed with fear of people being upset with me or attacking me. I know that is not a good thing, and I wondered if you would share how you are able to peacefully and graciously receive sharp and disapproving responses from people. Thank you. Well, that's worthy of its own fireside chat monologue. I wonder if I have actually commented on that. Whether I did or not. Well, we could find out, but it's worthy of addressing again. So here's the answer. First of all, in order for me to feel offended, there are very few people who could offend me or hurt me. They're people I love. Yes, it would be possible for my wife to hurt me, my kids to hurt me, my close friends to hurt me. But beyond that, why would I be hurt? I have to treasure you in order for me to be hurt. So I can be hurt by people that I treasure. And they tend not to hurt me, as it happens. I lucked out, even my kids. So that's a very big deal. And that's, everybody should have that. How can you let complete stranger hurt you? Well, they don't mean anything to you. I don't mean that strangers are not important. Every human being is created in God's image. But in terms of relating to my life, they're not capable, they don't have the capacity to truly hurt me. Number two, my remaining calm is one of my great weapons. I realized this very early in my career. If I start yelling, let alone acting like I'm hurt, I lose. And I don't want to lose. I don't mean for ego reasons, but because I have so many important values I want to see prevail. So I idealistically decided that I wasn't going to let this stuff get to me. And it is very effective, as you point out, my response to those silly comments. And by the way, I didn't even think the man was a bad man. There are people I think are bad people. I just thought he was silly. But I didn't think he was a particularly mean-spirited human being, and I acted accordingly. There are people I think who are evil, and I attack more readily when I do believe that. I would not address the head of Hamas in the same way. That man is, if there is a devil, that man is diabolical. But that's not true for this pastor who made silly remarks about the issue of people needing people and whether God is sufficient. So you get paralyzed when you think about people disliking you. Don't. This is where, and I'll end with this. This is one of the ongoing great issues of my life. How many people are governed by reason as opposed to emotion? And I think the answer is a small minority. It's not rational to react that way. My way is more rational. Why would I let you hurt me? Here's the beauty. We decide whether to be hurt or not. We decide whether to be offended. That's a really important lesson that I have mentioned in the past. That was a great question. Let me know if that works. Thank you all for watching and listening. These are dark days in the world, and I hope they brighten, but I don't see that happening immediately. In the meantime, I will be with you through it all. Thanks for watching. See you next week.
Thank you for watching this video. To keep PragerU videos free, please consider making a tax-deductible donation.